Toby, did you want this final summary of accounts?
But keep it up here so you can refer to it. Yes.
Okay, right. Ms. Bates, you're still under oath.
Okay. Do I need to do my name again?
No.
Okay. So I'll try and somewhat pick up where I left off. One of the things I wasn't sure was clear is the sheer size of the Wallingford Urban Village when you compare it overall to other urban villages. It has a huge amount of acreage. It's just a very large, kind of bloated-looking urban village. It has 700 single-family parcels that would be affected, whereas some other urban villages have none, or next to none. So that increases the significance of the impact. And also that a lot of those blocks are, it's not just two blocks wide, the blocks go for 20 blocks of this new zoning. Two blocks might be okay, 20 is a real different scenario. Also, the comp plan language indicates that we're going to grow an urban forest, that we want to be at a 30% canopy coverage and maybe to 40. In our neighborhood, if you go look at the LIDAR canopy study, we're at about 23%. So if you remove any of the canopy in our area, you're never going to get to our goal. And the city does recognize the value of trees in the biological section. It talks about, like the last man spoke of, pollution impacts on water and air, the stormwater retention, improvement to heat island, wildlife, human connection. So we document or acknowledge verbally those are valuable. We could put a monetary value on those. I've seen that done by other cities. And in other ways, you can value the amount of carbon that the trees assimilate. You can value the stormwater retention. You can establish a dollar figure of what this canopy is actually worth, such that it might trigger people to do more protective measures and recognize that trees are actually environmental machines. They're not just pretty things. They're not just frosting. They're an important part of our planetary infrastructure. The EIS, I don't think, properly quantified that value and the impact that changing the development standards has on that. Per the EIS, mitigation is required, and some mitigation is suggested in the EIS. One of the mitigation measures suggested was in lieu planting of trees somewhere else if a tree has to come down. But if you remove a tree that's maybe 50 to 100 years old, how you're ever going to plant a comparable value forest somewhere else in the Seattle area is not established in the EIS. There is not a lot of vacant land. There's not a lot of places to put new trees to grow your new urban forest. So we need to be more careful with the urban forests we have. We're also in the mitigation section relying upon the existing rules and ordinances to protect trees. In my experience, that's often meant that you have to have a developer that actually kind of cares a little bit, or you have to have neighborhood vigilantes who watch that tree or those trees like a hawk and go to every single meeting. The existing tree rules and ordinances are not effective at protecting trees, and I think there's a lot of documentation that's established that. Also, one of the protections that the existing rules rely on is departures, and these are departures from the development standards. So you get to build a building of a certain size and height, and if you have an exceptional tree, you can get a special benefit if you take away part of the building and protect the tree. And the special benefits that were given to protect the trees were things like you no longer need as much parking. We'll let the developer build more housing units and less parking. Or we'll let them go up another whole story. Or we'll let them intrude into their required setbacks. But with MHA, you've eliminated almost all of these bargaining chips. You have almost no setbacks. You're already increasing the height by one level. You've eliminated parking. Parking's not required. And so when you go from a low rise, from single family to like a low rise three zone, you're already going to a height that's probably 55 feet would be allowed. So if you had an exceptional tree and you said, well, let's try and save it by adding another floor, then do we what, go to 65 feet? How does this work in an urban environment to then have these huge towers to protect a tree? And that's what we did before, and that's what the existing rules, that's the way they work. But they won't work with MHA in place. And
due to the time crunch of preparing exhibits, this is not on the list. This is for demonstrative. Do I assume that you would like to have this to have her show you what she's going to talk about?
It's
not
going to
be offered for
this. Is what is this?
This is a document that she has put together that describes impacts of development on specific trees and what it looks like, and we cannot offer it as an exhibit unless they want to waive the right not to let it be admitted because it was not on our list. So am I allowed to use demonstrative exhibits?
There is no prohibition against demonstrative or illustrative exhibits. I wouldn't generally take one like this
okay.
as illustrative, though, because
that's
it's got
fine.
So much text in it.
Okay.
An illustrative, you know, we had an architect earlier today. It was a map. That
okay.
makes sense. But you had a question for the city that I don't think they answered yet.
It does have photographs, so I think that they could be fairly clearly seen from across the room. Go ahead.
Seen from across the room?
Yep, so I'll hold them up.
You'll hold them up. Okay. So what Toby's going to hold up is a picture of the current single-family zoned area that was proposed to go to low-rise. On the first page, you see the diversity and the lushness of the vegetation that's there now. On that block, there were a number of trees we counted, which are listed here. There were 12 total. Two were exceptional. This is just on basically one half of a block area. The second page shows the one of the trees that's listed as an exceptional tree with the City of Seattle. It shows in detail as the construction process proceeded, they shear the branches off that side of the tree. They're also supposed to protect the root zone, which is one of the other pictures where you see the bulldozer next to and underneath the tree. There are other tree protections they're supposed to put in place, watering, mulching, keeping construction equipment away. And this is just for exceptional trees. For other trees, there's nothing. This exceptional tree, if this were to happen on the other side when it's upzoned to low rise, this exceptional tree would have to be removed. So we're talking about we may damage our exceptional trees so much that they can't stay. The next picture is a view prior to the beginning of the construction where you see several of the exceptional trees listed. And this is from the arborist report that developer had to do because it's an exceptional tree. And at the bottom is a typical, you can't see it, but a typical building with the green space that's allowed, just a few feet, just a few straggly trees. And that's what would replace that lush canopy you saw on the first page. And so for the EIS to conclude that there's no significant impacts of these changes in development standards or zoning just seems really egregious when you look at it on the ground from the level of the neighborhood. The EIS also, in my opinion, didn't provide any adequate alternatives. There's one alternative. We upzone. We modify development standards a little bit here or push the zoning around a little bit there. But an alternative is a different way of proceeding. It's a way that would manifest different concepts to allow you to really evaluate what would be the best path to increase density in Seattle. I'm not against density, but I love nature, and I think that we can do a better job of both. And there are things that we could do that would certainly help. We could do an inventory of some of the canopy resources or the environmental critical areas. No more. You can't manage what you don't understand. We could expand the exceptional tree list and enforce those protections in the real world. We could offer incentives. Some cities do. They offer financial incentives to retain vegetation and trees. That's an idea we haven't put on the table. We could let the developer opt out of MHA payment or, you know, unit penalties, if you want to call it that, in exchange for preserving trees. You've got to take it a lot farther than the mitigation that's proposed. And that's in the proposed ordinance that's not even adopted yet. You've got to go a lot farther than that in order to actually preserve this canopy, this urban forest that you've already got. It's very hard to regrow a new forest. You really have to start with saving what you have. Questions? Or?
No, that's fine.
No?
That's fine. No more?
Good afternoon, Ms. Bates. My name is Daniel Mitchell. I'm an assistant city attorney with the city. I just wanted to ask, you aren't being called as an expert witness, is that correct?
No.
Okay. I don't have any further questions.
Redirect after
that? No.
Thank you, Ms. Bates. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
We'll see you on July 23rd. Is there anything housekeeping we need to do that we can do while we're here? We get all our exhibits in and covered.
Yeah. I'll do my exhibits when I'm on the stand again.
Yeah. Okay. Good. See you on the 23rd. Thank you.
Great.